Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The postseason is not only on fire within the NBA, but also internationally with EuroLeague Basketball. We speak with Evan Planchon, the head of digital marketing at EuroLeague Basketball. Justin goes in-depth about how EuroLeague works, the popularity of the league in Europe, its passionate fan base, and the relationship with the NBA with EuroLeague. Evan was a great, great guest, provided lots of awesome insight in regards to the popularity of basketball within Europe and its future in terms of EuroLeague and its relationship with the NBA. You don't want to miss this chat. Hoopsology is presented by Ball's Life, and now, Evan Planchon. He is the head of digital marketing for EuroLeague. We have the pleasure in welcoming Evan Planchon onto Hoopsology. Welcome, Evan.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming out to the show. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to this interview because on our show, we focus on like the mainstream basketball topics, but we also like to delve into basketball culture, and that includes internationally. And in recent years, on our radar, speaking for my co-host, EuroLeague has really grabbed our attention. And just for our audience that may not be familiar with EuroLeague, can you kind of give a quick synopsis of what is EuroLeague, how it works, and how it differs than the NBA?
Absolutely. Well, the EuroLeague was founded in 2000, so we have 24 years of history. We're very young by heart, but we're growing rapidly. We are the best basketball league in Europe, where we have 18 teams playing in the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague, the top tier basketball league in Europe. Teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona, you probably know them for their soccer divisions, but they also have their basketball divisions. We have teams in Greece, in Turkey, in Serbia. So I know probably, you know, most Americans in North America would see those crazy atmosphere games in Serbia, Turkey with flares. That's the EuroLeague in Turkey, Greece, and Serbia, etc. We have the most passionate fans I've seen in basketball. You really can't compare that with any other properties or sports. And we are getting a much stronger, talented pool of players playing in our league. Fighting for the EuroLeague trophy at the end of the year, which is always at the end of May. The way it works is that we have 34 rounds of regular season, and then we have the play-in tournament to secure the final two spots in the playoffs. The top eight advance to the playoffs. And after the playoffs is done, the four teams that win their series go to the final four. Very similar to the typical traditional NCAA Final Four, but basically four teams go to one location. This year will be in Berlin at the end of May. They will fight a single game elimination to be crowned EuroLeague champions. So this year, it's very tight, I have to say. We have very competitive standings, and we have around six or seven teams who are tied right now in terms of victories and losses, and we're approaching tomorrow the last round of regular season. So very exciting times for us. Yeah.
So you mentioned that with EuroLeague, there are connections to their soccer counterparts. I've always found that very interesting. Can you kind of delve into that more in terms of a lot of these organizations having both soccer teams and basketball teams? How does that relationship work? Because that's very different than what happens in North America.
Yeah, it's a great question, Justin. So, you know, let's take Barcelona as an example, because we're based in Barcelona. Our headquarters have been here since the beginning. Very lucky to be able to call this place home. So amazing place. But let's take Barcelona. So Barcelona Football Club is called Barcelona Football Club. They have their soccer division. And that soccer division is the biggest property they have inside the portfolio of Barcelona Sports. And that soccer team then has different divisions. So they have basketball, they have handball, they have indoor football, so indoor soccer, and much more. So the way it's structured for them as a club is that the soccer division then allocates different budgets and different priorities to these different divisions. So basketball, in many ways, as a sports division, relies a lot on the soccer division. This is good and it's also bad. Okay, so if the soccer team is not performing really well, financially speaking and performance wise, you will see the consequences as well on the basketball division. Okay, oh, wow. In the US and North America, is very different. Basketball franchises are running as their own business and they have their own arena most times and their own ecosystem. Here in Europe, you'll see that most teams are relying on their soccer divisions, but we also have new teams and traditional teams that don't rely on that and are their own basketball divisions, and it's great to see. So as a league, we are also owned by 13 out of 18 clubs that play for us right now. So 13 clubs are what we call A-licensed clubs. They control the league in terms of decision-making. Our job is to focus not only on the 13, but all 18 clubs inside the league playing today, help them grow. Let's say on my side, because I'm the head of digital marketing, is to help them grow their digital ecosystem, to understand that they have a lot of potential to grow their digital revenues, right? Because we also understand that clubs make most of their revenues on match day. So tickets, food and beverages in the arena, et cetera, et cetera. But they can make a lot more revenues across digital, okay? For many years, and I think this is where we're different to North America, I think we're just a step behind, is that for many years and still going on today, many of the clubs, basketball clubs, focus on winning on the court. Everything else is secondary. While we have other clubs right now who are focusing on both, and it's paying off in terms of commercial value, in terms of commercial valuation for the franchise, but most importantly, how they can grow revenues and then be able to allocate more revenues to improving the roster. And have a much stronger roster in order to potentially win the EuroLeague, which is a very hard league to win. So we had, over the last few years, we had several different crown champions. Every year, it's very difficult to bet, I guess, or to forecast who will be the grand winner. So it's very interesting to watch as well.
So can you talk about the synergy between the NBA and EuroLeague? I'm seeing several clips of Giannis and Luka saying that the EuroLeague is way more difficult than the NBA, seeing players go back and forth. Kemba Walker recently came over to EuroLeague. Like, can you talk about that synergy? What is the relationship there? And do you think there might be a formal relationship? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I've actually seen exhibitions between NBA teams and EuroLeague teams. Can you kind of talk about that and where the future of that relationship might be going?
Absolutely. So, you know, the NBA is by far the strongest league in basketball. We know this. Myself, growing up, I was always an NBA fan myself. I now watch more EuroLeague than NBA just because it's easier for me in Europe, and also because I love the European basketball sphere. But the NBA is a partner of the EuroLeague. We communicate with them. We understand. We work from each other, and we're able to work on a more strategic plan for what's next for basketball in general in the world. Okay, our duty is to elevate the game of basketball in the world, most starting with Europe. And the NBA has that across North America, but also in different markets, China, the Middle East, et cetera. So we're able to learn from that and be able to work from there. Several are clubs. For example, Real Madrid played the Dallas Mavericks early in the season, which Real Madrid won the game. It was a great game. The NBA was in Paris in January. Between Brooklyn and the Cavs, they had a game there, and I was there. Great show. So we're able to learn. Now, how do we differ between the NBA? I think it comes down to the fans. Okay, if you go watch a EuroLeague game, you'll realize quickly that first of all, the rules are slightly different. EuroLeague is really focused on defense, and this is where players coming from the NBA back to EuroLeague are struggling sometimes. Okay, so you mentioned Kemba Walker. We also have Jabari Parker, who is playing for Barcelona this year. He's having a tremendous season. But we also have other players, for example, like Juancho Hernan Gomez from the famous Netflix movie Hustle. So he was the main actor there. We call him Bo Cruz as a character. So he came back to the EuroLeague and joined Panathinaikos, which is a very big Greek EuroLeague club. And you see an NBA player who is a very good player coming to the EuroLeague and struggling to settle in after a couple of weeks. And that's because of how physical the game is and how every single possession matters. Our marketing motto is every game matters, because it's true. One victory can push you up to the playoffs. One loss can push you down. And we're seeing this on a weekly basis. But also the every game matters also applies to the game itself. It's 40 minutes, so shorter game. Every single possession matters. And our coaches, if you watch some highlights, are very, very, let's say, emotional, and they care a lot about the game, right? So it's very different, like in terms of power to the coaches, how the players react, and the fans are screaming the whole time during 40 minutes. A Serbian game or a Lithuanian game, the fans are not sitting down for 40 minutes. They're standing, they're chanting, they're screaming, they're supporting their team, they're getting mad at their team, right? So it's a very emotional game, and it's such a great spectacle to watch. And that energy is transitioned directly and transferred directly to the players. So they feel a very big responsibility to perform well on the court. They don't mess around. They know that if there's a jump ball, they have to get it. If there's a ball rolling out of bounds, they need to grab it and jump for it, because every possession matters. Because at the end of the day, our yearly games are finishing with very minimal score differences, on average between 4 and 5 or 6 points. So it's very tight every time. And for players who are coming from the NBA to the EuroLeague, they have to work very hard to adapt to this. If they don't put the work in to switch mindsets, it might be difficult for them. And we've seen this across different cases. And that energy and that physicality is why Luka and Giannis are speaking so highly of the league. You know, we didn't ask for that promotion. It's amazing that they're talking about it, because it's true. Luka saying that it's very hard to score in the EuroLeague, it's very true. When you have two defenders on you and where they're fighting for every possession, it's very true. But Luka is a remarkable talent, and Giannis as well. So we're very happy, and we feel proud that they're talking highly of this league.
So what's happening on the floor each and every game, you said it's a lot more defensively based. And with the fan base, I think here in America, we're used to a lot of offense, a lot of three-pointers. Can you kind of talk about that dichotomy? Because I know with a lot of older fans and the younger fans here, this just seems to be like a generational clash in terms of the three-point shot. Here in America, where I think a lot of fans would say that the game in the NBA has been taken over by the three-point shot. And that's caused some debate in terms of that's a positive or a negative. But in EuroLeague, that seems not to be the problem. Is that correct in terms of the
you're completely right there. And, you know, in NBA, you know, having someone drop 50, 60 points a night, it's not something rare. You know, it happens. But, you know, last week we had our highest scoring player, Nigel Hayes Davis, who had 50 points against Berlin. So 50 points in the EuroLeague can translate to 85 to 90 points in the NBA. I think that at least that's my opinion. It's very hard to score a lot of points. The NBA is very, very focused on the 3-point line. You're correct. I remember seeing a chart this week that was comparing 30 years ago to today, and it's a completely different heat map of shots taken. In EuroLeague, it's different. I think the coaches will really push you to take the easy shot, because it's you know, fast, so high defense. You don't see a lot of good shooters in terms of taking that shot, because if they miss one or two in a row, the coach will take them on the bench. So they need to find that easy shot, and most time it's getting in the paint and getting your chance there. So we have a very different game. It's quite a low scoring game. Most games finish around the 80s to 85s point mark. We rarely see anything above 100, for example. In fact, our Final Four championship game 2 years ago was in the low 60s, which we never saw before, but that shows you how defensive the game is. So it was between Real Madrid and FS Istanbul. So if we rewatched that game, the defensive power was extremely high. So it was great to watch with the score, you know, low score. If Americans or North American basketball enthusiasts look at that score, they're like, oh, that was a bad game. It wasn't. It's just that it's so physical that it's super hard to score. So when we have a player dropping 30, 40, 50, it's something to celebrate. And if you ask any NBA player that are currently who transferred to the EuroLeague, they'll tell you the same thing. So it's a quite interesting way of watching the basketball in Europe.
Is there any backlash from the fans when they see a low-scoring game, or do they just appreciate it? Because I know in America, there is, of course, tribalism. They want to see their team win, but also there is complaints if there's a playoff game that might be particularly low-scoring or might not be aesthetically pleasing to an American audience. It seems like in EuroLeague, it's much more focused on terms of actually the play on the court, and not in terms of not necessarily the I don't know. They find what we find America entertaining is different than what is happening in Europe. Is that accurate?
That's completely right, Justin. We know the NBA, the show is entertainment, and let's be honest, until the playoffs come, you don't have a lot of strong attention to the games, and like the fans are not really so involved until the playoffs come. And I think that's also because there's so many games, right? So it's you know, it's not easy to support your team every single night and show your support by being loud. In the EuroLeague, we have so many less games, and every single game matters. So the fans are really loud. If it's a 50 or 60 score game, point game, the fans don't really care, to be honest with you. They care about winning because they know how much it means for them. They know how much it means for the players, the organization, and they feel part of the organization. And they feel part of the city, right? So in Europe, your city winning a game, whether that's soccer or basketball or something else, it's pride. You know, it's showing your city on the European map. And I've seen that across different countries, but I see it in new basketball countries. When I say new basketball countries, literally like France or London, for example, in the UK, countries are not known for their basketball power, mostly soccer. But now we're seeing that they have stronger basketball divisions. And when I speak to their players, they're like, no, I want to put London on the map. I want Paris to be on the map. I want to show that we're strong at basketball and we can do this, right? And I think that's great to see. So, you know, come back to your question. If it's a low-scoring game, they don't care about entertainment. Like, they're here to win, and the entertainment will come itself because they know it's going to be a very tight game and every possession matters. And when you have every possession matters in the first quarter, it gets interesting, and that's what makes us unique. I would say it's our unique selling point for the EuroLeague product.
Staying on the fans, what can you tell our audience? Can you kind of delve in deeper in terms of the fans' connection to EuroLeague? You mentioned just the passion, the clips have gone viral, just about their fans supporting their teams compared to here. I mean, I've been to a few NBA games. I mean, I've seen the opposing fans often be louder than the home team.
Yeah,
the home team won the NBA title. So this is not a fan base that, you know, is not into basketball or their team is performing poorly. I live in Denver, so this might make a lot of Nuggets fans angry, but been to a couple of Nuggets games where the opposing fans are usually pretty louder compared to the home fans, which really shocked me. So can you kind of talk about the dichotomy of just the fans' relationship with EuroLeague particularly?
Yeah, look, the fans is what makes us so special. I keep saying it internally to my team and to our stakeholders. Our number one most important stakeholder is our fans. Because they spend so much energy and efforts and resources on following their team. Like, if we look at a team like in Serbia, we have two teams. We have Partizan and we have Restal Belgrade. Both teams, they're like number one enemies between each other. It's a derby every time they play. And they have over 20,000 fans coming to the arena, shouting, singing. They're here at the arena 3 hours before the game. They stay after the game to celebrate with the players. If they don't win the game, they always stay behind as well to talk to the players and see how they can win the next one. So they feel part of this family, right? And when you see this and when you feel this emotion, it's pretty strong, and it makes it very special. So our fans are the most important ones. They're not going anywhere. Every time they're getting stronger and stronger. They're always supporting the team, whether it's a home or away game. So away game, it could mean that you're traveling 4 or 5 hours on a flight. Right, if you're playing in Lithuania and the next day you have to play in Spain, it's a long flight. So they're always there supporting their team, and I think it's beautiful to watch that. Very loud, but you'll never have a home game where the visiting team is louder than the home team, because the fans of each team is very strong and they're gonna make noise. So if they see the opposing team fans making noise, they're gonna double the volume because it's my house. And you, like I told you, right, it's a question of pride to win in your city. So they have to fight and be loud. So it's a very loud game, sometimes too loud. And it's a beautiful experience to be in. But the NBA, going back to that, it's true. It's not that loud, but you know, this might change. You know, I see what's happening at the Clippers, for example, the new arena. They want to build a section where fans will be standing up and cheering. I would love to see that in action. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's going to change how this show is and how entertainment is, because you have fans who sit down and enjoy food and beverages and entertainment and are watching the game, okay, and maybe they're on their phone, but you also have fans who are here to watch their team win. And we have to understand that, especially now that we have European stars in the NBA, that also attracts a lot more European fans who are used to the EuroLeague, right? So they want to bring that EuroLeague passion to North America. So I think what the Clippers are doing is an amazing initiative, and I hope the other franchises will start to follow the same momentum in the next few years.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Completely innovative, and I hope that trend spreads throughout the entire league. I want to ask you about traditions. Is there any traditions that happen within EuroLeague that fans in North America may not know about particularly?
Not really. I think it really differs on the country because we work across nine different countries in Europe. So they all have their own different demographics and religions, languages, et cetera, et cetera. So they all have their different traditions, I would say. But as a league, we're very neutral. And what we see is just a pure joy in the following from the fans, like I said, right? So it's a pleasure to have this as a unique selling point of our product. And let's see what's next for us. As a league, we need to continue to expand. We also need to understand that European sports is not as financially strong as, let's say, North American sports, because that business model was never based on just being so commercial. But we need to elevate our game as well on that side of things in order to retain very good talent and to continue to grow the league. So we're aware of that. We're working very hard. We're working on business expansion that may go beyond Europe as well, and continue there. And I think, you know, partnering with the NBA on a strategic thinking, just discussing with them, which is what's happening today, you know, our CEO and our managing team are in active talks with the NBA to try to know how to elevate basketball on a global basis. I think that's great news for everyone because we have to do so. And just be able to share that passion. And I hope that if we can share something to the other leagues in the world is our fan passion. Because if you go to a basketball game, you want to hear and you want to feel that passion. And I think we have that. So I think it's just a matter of time before we work all together and elevate the game of basketball and get closer to the number one, the top three sports in the world, you know, soccer, cricket, and also American football, which is very popular as well.
So I want to ask you this, and forgive me if this is maybe overstepping, but here in America recently, I would say the last 5 years, gambling has been really huge here, and particularly the NBA embracing gambling. I'm just curious, because you mentioned the fans, when they go to a game, they're focused on their team winning. And here, you're absolutely right, that the fans, their attention spread five different ways. They're on their phones in terms of gambling. They need to eat something. They're watching the halftime show. They might be talking to their friends, whatever. But it seems like the NBA is particularly all in on this as gambling initiative. I'm just curious, is there a relationship between gambling and EuroLeague in terms of betting on games? Or is that only just a particular phenomenon in North America?
It's a great question, Justin. I think, you know, working in this business for 5 years now, I don't see the connection with gambling. And there's different reasons for that. Number one reason is because in Europe, as a continent, the local regulations differ. So if you go to Lithuania, gambling is completely banned. It's illegal. Oh, wow. So you can't promote gambling in basketball and sports, okay? If you go to Spain, it's a little bit more different, more flexible. If you go to Greece, it's a lot more prevalent. So we as a league, we don't have a global betting partner. We have regional deals with different betting partners in Turkey, in Spain, and in Greece, for example. But in different countries, we don't have it, and we just can't by law, by regulation. Is gambling an important part for fans? I would say it's a minor importance part, because they just want to watch their team play. And there's, in Europe, we don't really have that philosophy and tradition of gambling that is more prevalent in North America. Now, of course, there's the pros and cons, right? The pros of having a gambling model is that as a league and teams can make a lot more money because it's more interest and it's commercial, okay? But the cons is, you know, where the latest scandals I've seen in the NBA, where, you know, maybe players may be involved or referees or staff, it's these things can happen. It's logical. But as a league, we are very neutral. And I think we don't promote gambling as a league. And in fact, it's in Europe, I think they're starting to crack down on gambling in general. Yeah. So we don't have this phenomenon. And I think it's really, really linked more to North America. Yeah.
So I want to ask you, you mentioned earlier about kind of the future of EuroLeague helping grow the game of basketball globally. Are there other initiatives besides partnering with the NBA? I think you hinted at expansion. I think that's really interesting. Like, where do you see EuroLeague going in particularly, even on a, I guess, coverage in terms of other fans around the world being able to view EuroLeague just with the state of streaming compared to kind of the older way of watching TV? Television yeah. or sporting events is usually based on just traditional airways, but now there's the internet, so those barriers are eliminated. What are the kind of the future steps EuroLeague is looking forward to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, we have our own OTT, over-the-top business, which is our streaming platform. It's called EuroLeague TV. If you're in America and you want to discover EuroLeague, you can go to ELTV, EuroLeagueTV.com and be able to get a monthly pass or a free trial and watch the games there. So that's great for us because one, it drives business and it drives awareness in different markets. So, you know, I was checking numbers lately and, you know, the second and third country in terms of sales for EuroLeague TV platform is actually the US and the UK. And that's great. That's great to see, especially the US, because we're getting more popular in the US thanks to great protagonists and superstars talking about us, but also because we're having a lot more talent going to the US and from the US. So I think that's really interesting. With the NBA, I think it's at the moment, like I said, our team, our management team and top level are talking to the NBA to see what a future would look like to expand the game of basketball. In terms of business expansion, we've been having active conversations, and I think this is public knowledge, in expansion in the Middle East, for example, and because it's becoming a very big market. The NBA has been there for 3 or more years now. So we're looking at all potential areas, always with the idea of promoting European basketball and global basketball. And two, of course, there's a big push on making our league and financial model more stable, okay, where the reason why we're able to offer such a good spectacle is because the teams' levels are very close to each other. So you don't really know who's going to win each game because the competition level is very tight. But if we have one team that is supported by their soccer division and have a lot more, let's say, budget expenditure than another team, you might start to see an unfair advantage in many ways. So our job as a league is to make sure that all the teams have all the resources they can. Our job is to grow revenues for the club as well so they can afford to have the best talent possible and let the game happen on the court. You know, let's see what happens. But so far, over the last 24 years, we've enjoyed very, very tight competition, and this year even more. So I'm really excited to see what's going to happen starting next week for the play-ins until the Final Four in Berlin on May 24th and May 26th.
And you mentioned a play, and I'll let you go with this question. I believe this is the first year that that's happening. It's called the Play-In Showdown. How do you feel about that? It's kind of, we've seen that in America with the NBA with the play-in tournament. What has been the fan response to the play-in showdown? Has been negative, positive, excitement? What has been
their reception so far? I think overall, and personally, I love it. I think most fans love it, except if you're caught in the play-in. So let's say you're currently 7th and 8th seed in the standings, and you're like, oh man, I have to play the play-in now. So it's tough because they know that if you have a bad game, you could be out. And in the EuroLeague, every single game matters. So most, I would say 90% plus have really adopted the play-in as a great thing because they know making the top 8 is so difficult that if you have a second chance, they'll take it. So really excited to see that. We're going to have the play-in being played over 72 hours. So we'll know who will be the last two candidates for the playoffs over 72 hours. And it's going to make this very entertaining. At the same time, while this is happening, we're currently having the Euro Cup finals. The Euro Cup is our secondary competition where we have 20 teams battling during the whole season to be promoted to the EuroLeague. And right now we have the Euro Cup finals is between Paris Basketball and Bourges-en-Bresse, two French teams. Makes me very proud as a French person myself to have two teams representing my country. But it's great to have such a strong team like Paris and a very good team like Bourges being able to fight it out to be crowned Euro Cup champion and be promoted to the EuroLeague next year. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, at this moment, it's all about playoffs, play-in, and Final Four. And I hope our North American fans, the basketball fans in general, can tune in and discover this new product, because it's a great way to enjoy European basketball.
Absolutely. Evan, this has been a fantastic chat. Thank you very much for joining us. Please let our audience know where they can find you on social media, where they can find EuroLeague and anything else you want to promote as well.
Thank you, Justin. Find me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, Evan Planchon. If you type EuroLeague Basketball, Head of Digital, you'll find me. And I'm very active and love to share the good news and the good work that we're doing in the EuroLeague. If you want to follow the EuroLeague, we have an amazing social media team working behind Instagram, Facebook, X. Our YouTube channel is very good as well. So give it a shout, give it a follow, and go from there. Check out our website, check out our mobile app. If you like fantasy games, check out the EuroLeague Fantasy Challenge, an amazing game that you can play, predict who's going to win, and some amazing prizes that you can join. So that's all I can say. Thank you, Justin, for having me. And let's see. Let's have a great basketball season, end of season, both in the NBA and in the EuroLeague. And I'm excited to see what's next for us.
Fantastic. Thanks, Evan, for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Boss Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.